And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Okay, we have the finger, and that means it is time to go.
I think we can start a new show called The Finger of Aaron.
Yeah.
It sounds almost biblical.
It sounds great. But until we get to that point, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here in the Mark Grau Studios in downtown glamorous Burbank. In the studio with me is Malcolm Berman of Malcolm Digital Radio. And our guest today is a very unusual lady, Lisa
with an R. You're from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Lisa. How'd you know that? Vartanian, and she wrote a book called The Price and Power of Freedom. I hope you got that. Anyway, yeah, you should have that. Good. Anyway, she came here as an immigrant. Not like the immigrants that are coming here now, but she came here like many of your parents did, or my parents did, or anybody else, where they came here because this was a land of opportunity that they wanted to take advantage of, not make fun of, or say, give me what you have, and I'll just be on my way and do as I merry well please. So without any further ado.
Which you do.
Which we do anyway. Okay. Lisa, here we go. And
hello, Stan. Hello, Malcolm.
All right, you could start off, say whatever you like, and if we don't like it, we'll give you our questions.
Sounds good to me. I first and foremost want to thank you both for the opportunity. Ever since I've been into this, you know, came to this country 36 plus years ago, have had great interest for this tiny little young country.
Well, wait a minute. You didn't tell us if you snuck across the Mexican border.
No, we waited. Actually, we came from Armenia, and Armenia used to be part of the old Soviet Union, one of the 15 republics of the old Soviet Union. And it took us many years, my parents, many years and a lot of patience to immigrate to United States of America legally.
Were you considered a political refugee?
We were not refugees. We came through visas. We had to have a relative here in this country. And there were a lot of interesting channels because the way politics ran in Soviet Union, it was just very, very corrupt. And even though my grandmother's sister lived in Lebanon, our documents showed that she lived in the United States, and that is how we were able to apply for visas to immigrate to the States.
Right. Well, when did the Soviet Union break up?
Around 1988.
Okay, so they were still, Armenia was still part of the USSR.
Absolutely.
It was back as far as 88?
1988 was the first demonstrations, and actually the tiny little country of Armenia was the first one to declare its independence and separation from the Soviet Union.
And the Soviet Union didn't do anything about it?
You know what? By then, I think...
They were too powerless.
They were too powerless. I was listening to a program about the Chernobyl that took place in April of 1986. And at that point, I think Mikhail Gorbachev wrote in one of his memoirs that that was one of the major reasons why the old Soviet Union was, you know, collapsing rapidly.
Yeah, they just had their, I think, the 30th anniversary of the Chernobyl.
Yes. Actually, it was a couple of days ago, April 26th, to be exact.
And they tested some milk from that area, and it was contaminated.
Yeah, right.
It's still contaminated.
And just think, in October of 17, in other words, about a year and a half from now, will be the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution.
Right.
I remember that well.
Yes, I sure you do.
But when we had spoken before, and so you came to this country about 1981.
81, January.
I have a big question. Did you in any way have to pay a graft or bribery to get your visas or whatever they gave you?
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us about
that? Well, that's the American way.
No, this is before we got to the United States.
Not if you know Obama, you don't.
I like you, Stan.
Careful, my wife is listening.
Yeah. My parents worked very hard. I come from a traditional home, but hard work, individual hard work in the Soviet regime was punished. So everyone worked for the factories and the big government. There was 100% control of big government. And the salaries that my both hardworking parents made was barely enough to get the basic necessities, if that. And after 30 years of hard work and zero accomplishments, my parents had to sell our home. And 70% of those thousands of dollars that we sold our home for were basically paid to a KGB agent.
Really?
For our release, which is definitely in my book. It's an eye-opener.
You're right. It's in there.
It is in my book, and I remember that man's face clearly. I did not like him, but I was petrified. He made a couple of visits to our home, and I know exactly what was taking place.
What would you do if you ran into him today, let's say, at Ralph's here in the Valley?
I would say freedom rocks, individual freedom rocks. And that is one of my messages.
That's all you'd say? Come on.
honestly, I'm not a mean person.
You're not a vindictive person.
I'm not. I'm a principled person. And there's endless number of nationalities and races in this country. My message is very simple and clear that if we look for that opportunity and work very hard, it is a little bit tougher these days. But United States of America is the only land that that opportunity truly exists. And I encourage every young person, instead of a handout, to just work hard, put something in their mind, what they want to accomplish in 10 years or 20, and there's a very good chance. We might not all be presidents and celebrities and attorneys and doctors, but you can be a hardworking plumber or an electrician.
How about a rap star?
I don't know about that. There's a lot of, that's a tough field. You know, there's a lot of baggage with that star, in my opinion.
Well, you came here during an interesting time because you said in 81, that was like 6 years post Vietnam. And that's when all the American youth were protesting.
Was it six
protesting.
Or 16? Didn't the Vietnam take place in the late 60s?
Yeah, but they pulled out in 75.
75, okay.
Yeah, most people didn't know there was a war.
That's another story
until the I forget when the Bay of Tonkin was.
Well, that was in the 60s.
That was Johnson, right?
Something like that.
Right.
That was because I went to CCNY and the Progressive Labor Party in 1961 were picketing the war, and people didn't know there was a war because the expansion of the war didn't happen until.
You know what history has shown? The Bay of Tonkin's thing was contrived.
Contrived. Yeah.
You know what? Also, we didn't have this kind of social media. Technology was not this obvious.
I'm a little older than you. I remember in World War II, I'm older than you also, Malcolm, we'd get all of our news, but it would come days,
absolutely.
Maybe a week or longer after the actual fact, during which time it was censored, cleaned up, sanitized, if you will.
Right.
Things that weren't fit for the American public to see, they just deleted or whatever. We're getting that only now. Today, if you get a war, you watch it on CNN live as it is happening.
Well, that's what happened during the Vietnamese War when we got a lot of the footage. The cameramen were there.
Right.
And people knew that people bleed and die.
Yes,
I've read
about
that. It's not like in the
movies. Right. I have read about that, absolutely. But, you know, Stan, going back to you talking about the media, how they wanted to cleanse things. Well, living in Soviet Union, there was no freedom of speech. So the media was 100% controlled by the government.
And it still is. So,
and you know what? Now I'm not there. I'm just speaking from experience as a young child. We were completely cut off from the world. Soviet Union was sending a man into the moon, yet we absolutely were clueless what was taking place in the world.
Would you consider the Soviet Union back then, not now, but back then, a third world country?
No. They had great scientists and their own economy. I mean, if you bring the economy into the picture, yes, they were certainly world third world because everything was government controlled. There was no economy. But we had a lot of millions of smart folks, scientists and doctors. The opportunity was what was missing to turn things around. But that's how the totalitarian regime liked it. 100% control of individual freedom.
Right, but before you moved here and you knew you were coming here, what were your preconceived concept of America, of the United States?
Well, I come from a political family. My grandparents, I have to go back a little bit further before World War II, when my family had escaped the Ottoman Empire and ended up in Greece as refugees. My grandfather was one of the political leaders to bring most Armenians into the old country of Armenia. They thought that communism would be a fair shot to humanity. Naively, I don't know, I can't speak for my grandfather, but him and his brother were one of the organizers, and that's how many thousands of families, including mine, left Greece behind after World War II was brutal to them. There were a lot of starvation, and they figured this is our opportunity, this is our chance. There was a lot of propaganda from the Soviets. So in 1947, my family ended up in Armenia.
From Greece.
From Greece. My father was a young teenager, and he absolutely and amongst many of his peers knew they were in the wrong place. They knew instantaneously that they should have never left Greece, but they were young children. So political yell-outs and conversations were a constant talk in my home.
Were any of your relatives arrested? In jail, tortured, or
they were not arrested, but some of them were actually had just been shipped to Siberia. Soviet system had a spy, many spies amongst. They would bribe people to be spies. So my family and most people had to really watch what they said and how they said it, and if the criticism of the system was just out of the question. So America's name, going back to your question, was mentioned constantly. And from a very young age, I was very curious. When, you know, a lot of kids would play outside, I would try to sneak into one corner, and adults would not allow young kids to sit in the room because they were afraid if, you know, someone like me would go outside and repeat what was said in that room. But every opportunity I was given, I would sit in one corner and try to listen and make more sense about this. Why was my father so unhappy living in Armenia? What was so bad with communism, and what was freedom all about?
Well, what did you know about America? Did you were there newspapers? Were there books? Did you see any films?
She said it was all censored.
Well, it was.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because my father's aunt, my grandfather's sister, immigrated to America, to New York, as a matter of fact, with her husband.
I know her well.
You wouldn't. But anyways, they moved to Los Angeles in the 50s, I believe. But prior to that, her and her husband lived in the States and would write letters to my family and to the extended family also. Those letters were certainly censored. And in 1966, when my dad's cousin was getting married, they decided to visit the family. The entire family was in Armenia, and just her and her husband and their children were in the United States, and they wanted to come and see everyone. So in 1966, they were able to come, you know, over to Armenia, and she was extremely disappointed. I was only an infant. I don't remember that visit. There are photos that I look and I, you know, see how the family was just overjoyed to see their aunt and their, you know, and my grandfather had died, but his brother was still alive, and he was very happy to see his sister. But she made a statement and said that in the States, the poorest of the poor were way beyond better than the way my family basically lived. There was no running water. There was no electricity. Food was just bare minimal, and people were happy. At least they thought, you know, Dennis Miller says they, you know, didn't know what happiness was, and I concur with him that they thought they were happy because every little thing, if they were able to buy bread, that made them happy. Mm. So
they didn't know any better.
It's
from where you come from.
But let me ask you a question. I think this is really relevant to today. Apparently, you and your relatives and your family came here looking for something better, and in so doing, you wanted to contribute. Why do we have such a great difference between your generation and what you people did compared to those who are coming here now?
I believe there's a message out there, and this goes back further, Stan. I think it's not just my generation. I'm going to compare this to at least the beginning of the 20th century, in the early 1900s, when a lot of Italian, Irish, and Jewish immigrants, to name a few, came to the New World.
Let me take this because you're making the noise.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Stan always does it.
I stop.
They actually came to the New World for an opportunity, and I really believe they came here, rolled their sleeves up, and looked for work, wanted to assimilate to the Americanism, I can call that, and they wanted their children to learn the English language as fast as they could and find that opportunity that was there for them. And when I came here and my parents, I saw that helplessness on their faces, and they settled, with the advice of other immigrants, they settled for social programs. I was very disappointed. I clearly knew, and I've said this many times in my speakings, that we were very poor in Armenia, poorest of the poor. I never had my own room, and I did not have my own bed, just the way in the movie with Sandra Bullock, The Blind Side. Not because of my parents were single parents or they were destructive. They were actually very traditional. It's just the way the system was. And that had never bothered me. That's just the way it was. But it had really bothered me that my parents would choose the social programs for me, the few hundred dollars that they received. And that prompted me to really try to understand this wonderful country. And while my surrounding immigrants were just mesmerized by the basic necessities and the material goods, and I was too. I would be lying if I said I wasn't interested, but I wanted also to take great interest in the history of this young country.
Yeah, but you know, from the way you explain your background in Armenia, you were only poor because you had no cash. But you had...
No, they were poor. They didn't have the opportunity to get
but
cash.
But you had the intellectual... it seems like the family was very much involved with thought, with intellectual activities, with learning. A lot of poor people... They were more concerned about eking out a living and not really talking about, you know, concepts. It seems your family was more involved both politically and just idea-wise.
But Malcolm,
so that made you poor financially.
Malcolm,
but it didn't make you poor culturally.
There have been many countries before and since where they eradicate those people that have that intellectual ability because they're the only ones that could possibly, tear down what they have. create a new government.
Oh, right. In Armenia, they probably were against it, or the Soviet Union, but not here, where she had the, where you had the background of an active mind.
I believe I did. I come from family of readers. Intellect definitely runs in my family. And to be fair to the society, there were a lot of intelligent people. And a lot of them did have high degrees and went to universities. There was just, you couldn't do it. As I had mentioned earlier, we did have free education. And many people were able to take advantage of that. And there was a major bribery involved in that. That's a whole different conversation. But I did read a lot. The books were part of growing up because there's nothing else to do. There were no television programs, and
didn't play with the internet.
You didn't have TV back then?
We did, but there were no programs on television, and maybe that was a good thing. And
I'm going to interrupt you real briefly. I'm listening to your story. It's very similar to mine. Isn't as bad as yours, but my family coming here way back, a couple of generations.
Right.
Very similar to yours. I'm not going to talk about that because this is really your program today, your hour, not mine. But I will tell you, I'll share with you one story. I have an uncle. He's since passed away in Russia. He's the only one who elected to stay. Everybody wanted to get out of there as fast as they could, and they were able to. So he went through World War II. He was able to get his family out of the advancing armies of the Nazis. They lived in Kiev. He got them to the other side of the Ural Mountains. He was smart. He knew what to do. He was in the army when everyone left him there. He ended up as a major in the Russian or Soviet army, but he never saw battle because they shipped him to the Far East on the Japanese side in case Japan would attack. Mm-hmm. So obviously nothing happened there until after the A-bomb, and they attacked Japan. But after the war, we were finally able to get him to come here for a visit, and he visited our house. We were living then in Rockland County, New York. And he didn't say it to me because he spoke only Russian, but he spoke to my aunt, who spoke a number of different languages. And afterwards, she told me he didn't believe that that was my house. He said it was lent to me by the government for show.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's what took place in the good old Soviet Union.
And that was 1969,
'69. That is a very familiar, I believe it, 100%, because that's how Soviet Union basically operated. And I need to go back. I appreciate you sharing that story with me. That's a very good story. But Malcolm, going back to your comment or your question, we were dirt poor and my parents could barely make ends meet. But my mother saw that I did get not only good education, but she sent me to a music school. And many kids alike, I play the piano, and my wonderful piano teacher happened to be a Russian Jewish woman. She has left a lifelong impact on me. She was the most patient, kind woman that I knew. She would sit with me for minimum 2 hours until I perfected quarter of the page of that whatever item that she was teaching me to perfect on the piano. And that woman, I was curious to know what her salary. She had gone a great deal of schooling and practicing for endless many years. Her salary at that time in Russia was 60 rubles.
That's not much.
It's not much at all.
But her satisfaction or her salary, what she got out of life is teaching you.
Absolutely.
That's
she
what
was
she was
meant
proud
to be a
of,
teacher,
right.
And she was very proud.
Her salary was the pleasure that she got from doing what she did.
Right,
she did.
Like I think it was Confucius says, if you do something that you love, you never have to work a day in your life.
That's good.
That is
very
true.
Good.
Now I want to pick up your life from coming into this country. Where did you land? You came over by plane, obviously?
Yes.
You
flew in. It was my first plane ride.
A jet?
It was a Boeing 747.
A direct flight from Armenia
There were no direct flights. Everything had to go through Moscow.
Oh, okay.
So I will share a story, if I may. This is a minute of a story.
Go ahead.
It has left a lifelong impact, just the way my piano teacher has. We came to Moscow, and we stayed there for a couple of weeks, and we had to visit American Embassy to get clearances for our family. And when I walked into that embassy with my family, this gorgeous blonde woman greeted us, tall, beautiful, that I was just, my jaw dropped. I was mesmerized by her beauty. American woman from embassy approached us with such kindness. I never thought that type of kindness exists. I had never experienced such kindness.
Especially from an official.
And she was the representation of this country. And before I even came here, I knew I loved America. I really wanted to know a lot more about it.
Did you speak English at all?
I did not. And my mother did another thing for me. She was a tough woman. She was not this loving, caring. I guess back in her days, you didn't just jump and hug and kiss. It was not touchy-feely mother. She was more disciplinarian, but I know her love was just endless love for us. When I was in fifth grade, we were to take foreign language. We learned Armenian and Russian from first grade. But in fifth grade came French or English. My classroom was to take French as a foreign language. My mother fought the school system very hard, and it was any change there was a tough deal. She moved me from my classroom to another classroom where English language would be taught as a foreign language. And so for 3 years, from fifth to eighth grade, I did take English classes as foreign, very basics. I knew table and I knew very short sentences and words, but the conversational was just completely not even in near sight. To answer to your question, no, I did not speak the English language. I knew very little. But we flew from Moscow to Italy. That was that was how it worked. We flew to Italy. I befriended a couple of Americans in the trip. And again, I could just, there was a lot of hand and motion just speaking back and forth with them. But just the very few words that I knew, they were so kind. And my encounter with the first three Americans was just very positive and has left me a lifelong impact. I talk about this gorgeous woman in my book because she was just the nicest soul. And then from going back to my journey from Italy, we stayed there for a couple of days. Then we flew to New York.
So how long so far did it take from when you left Armenia to your arrival?
From
New York?
We left Armenia January 3rd. And I have relived my life writing this book. It was an amazing experience and somewhat therapeutic, if I might add. We left Armenia on January 3rd. On January 27th, I believe it was my middle sister's birthday, we flew to Italy from Moscow. So we were in Moscow for about 3 weeks. And
well, they checked you out?
They checked us out, yes. And it was a pretty severe passage. It was just... and again, if time permits, I will kind of touch base.
Did you ever think at any time that they would stop and say, you're not going through, we're sending you back?
Absolutely. Mm. Our parents, and not just mine, all the parents that were immigrating, there were many families, and we were kind of a support group for each other, would tell us, even the walls have ears, do not. And when we entered the Air Float was the airline from Moscow to Italy.
Aeroflot,
they said, you're still in danger. Do not say anything. You're not supposed to wait until touchdown in Italy, and then you're free. And I clearly understand now. I was a teenager. I didn't realize the greatness of what that meant. But I've done enough research that I knew that Stalin's regime, even though had changed quite a bit after his passing in the mid-50s, but that the regime was still in just full force.
Well, they say, you know, if you see any of the modern movies, any American tourists that come to Moscow now, you know, check all the rooms for bugs. And
right.
It's the same thing.
A leopard doesn't change its
spots. So is it in the United
However,
States.
However, today, and this would never have happened way back, you have U.S. FBI agents operating in the Soviet Union, or Russia, if you will, and Moscow.
Well, you had it back then also. There were
before 88?
Yeah. There was a whole
network. Then they were hiding.
Now it's open.
It was CIA. FBI is only domestic.
CIA, yes. But now it's regular FBI. Yeah.
But anyway, going back, because we could do... Well, we could go to different tangents.
Absolutely.
We could do a weekly program on this.
You arrived in New York. Where did you arrive? Which airport?
Kennedy. And it was pretty emotional and nerve-wracking because apparently we were told we had a couple of hours. And from Italy, I need to go back and tell you that we couldn't bring any of our belongings. Not that we had much.
But you couldn't bring anything?
We couldn't bring anything. Anybody who was married could just wear their simple wedding band.
So just the clothes on your back.
But just clothes on our back. We had no money. I need to definitely bring awareness of nonprofit organizations, generosities. I really am a believer of charity because from Italy, a nonprofit organization picked up our tabs on our air flight tickets and our just journey until Los Angeles.
Were they an American nonprofit or was it international?
It was an American nonprofit, and I will forever be grateful to that organization. And I have tried
but
to look them up.
Was there anyone to meet you at these, like New York, LA?
No.
No one, no relatives, no one from those agencies?
Not in New York, but in Los Angeles, yes. We had some families who had come at least a couple years prior to us to the States. And they did come and greet us. And they had come to the wrong airport. They were fresh immigrants and, you know, barely spoke the language. And they had gone to the wrong airport. And for about 20 minutes, it was a pretty nerve-wracking. And I was so nervous looking at my parents.
What would you do if no one ever showed up?
You know what? There have been so many stories that just strange Armenians would just go to the airport just to pick up newcomers. And that has happened endless many times. And finally went to, in 20 minutes or so, which felt eternity. You know, our relatives rejoiced. Oh, it was just, you know, a sigh of relief.
Did you stay in New York or did you do this transfer?
No. It was just a transfer of planes and we were just directed by other immigrants. It was just a chaotic journey. I was very excited just to even have my first flight in a plane.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Some, again, nice Americans flying from New York to Los Angeles shared some American candy bars. Oh, my God. I have just died and gone to heaven. You know, and
Hershey strikes again.
Nestle was – I remember it clearly. I was able to read, and I was so happy that I was able to read.
You were able to read.
The English. Okay. Yes, the English language.
Okay. Now we're arriving in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Where do you go from here? We have some relatives
pick us up, and due to their just apartment situations, we're split. Me and my sisters go to one family member, and my parents and my grandmother go to another family member's home. And this was on a weekend. We landed Friday evening. We had the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I believe by Sunday, some of the goods that we were able to bring with us, the very limited few cameras and what have you, we were able to sell. My mother was able to sell in Italy. There was this Armenian merchant guy who knew that the immigrants would bring, we were allowed a small amount of black caviar and some cameras. Zenith cameras, I think, were the brand. We were able to make and raise about $1,000. That went for a down payment to our tiny little one-bedroom apartment for the six of us.
Whereabouts in Los Angeles?
In Hollywood.
In Hollywood, that, huh?
Yes. And I, before
But you had running water.
Oh my gosh, we were impressed beyond means. We had an actual
indoor
bathroom and running hot water, and that was wonderful. And I couldn't write. I kept writing letters.
How about air conditioning?
We had one of those portable ones, which was, again, wonderful.
Did you find the people friendly?
Absolutely. I've told you.
In your book, you talk about people being as many as 10 to a room.
Right, right. Because we just couldn't afford. I mean, we just simply didn't have the money.
So now with six, that's a luxurious step up.
Yes, absolutely. And we had no complaints. And I still didn't have my bedroom or my bed for
but you.
You know,
didn't care.
I didn't care.
You were in
America. You know, that was just. I was used to that.
Did you go walk the streets of Hollywood and see the?
That's the first thing my father did. My father was beyond. His dream had come true. He loved movies, Hollywood movies, and he had shared many of the movies that Greta Garbo and John Wayne and few of the Hollywood legends.
So he was in heaven.
Oh, he would walk from Hollywood and Wilton. It was our major crossings. He would walk to Highland, which is at least about 3 miles or so one way.
And he didn't care.
He didn't. He would go to the Chinese theater.
Well, they had the Walk of Fame there. That's all the stars.
Oh, he was just mesmerized. But like all things, I should say, within a couple of short 2 weeks, reality had sunk in. I realized at that time that his character was not a strong one, because he was just failing his character, his personality under the immigration pressure was really taking its toll, and he was becoming a very distant father from all of us, and he was smoking quite a bit, and he wasn't handling this change as I would anticipate, and I was very sorry to see the way he was taking this was taking an effect on him.
And did you ever speak to him about this? Or
I did. I did. Within a short 2 months, he clearly was just lost in his own thoughts and sadness. And if we understood depression, I really believe that he was fully depressed. And when his first doctor's visit, and that's part of the reason I believe they also signed up for the social programs. Because he just didn't know what to do.
You're against the social programs, but for people who don't have any other way to go, at least initially, there has to be some help to help you.
But you know what, Malcolm, I will take that one step further and say, if my memory serves me well, my father was a shoemaker in Armenia. There was an opportunity here for him to go to work for a small little business that made shoes. And with the advice of other immigrants, he declined that. And if he had not accepted the social programs and if he had a reason to wake up in the morning and go to work, I believe, I could be completely wrong on this one, but I believe he would have been in a better place. He wouldn't have time to sit and feel sorry for himself or the situation. He just did not see the bigger picture for us, the opportunity.
Yeah, well, the question is immediately, would the money that he made as working in a shoe store or shoemaker, would that be enough to offset the money that he had from the social programs?
Yes.
And can he support a family?
Yes,
but I don't know the situation.
Right.
But I know your feelings.
You know what? Because in short 2 years, I knew we had to get out of that situation. When I landed my first job at a local market, For, I think, 295 was my starting salary, either 295 or 325. I'm not 100% sure. I can't remember it at the moment. But there was a time where I supported my whole family. By then, my father had died. Things had taken just – events had just kind of taken place so fast. I didn't know where – you know, and I was in school. I was in high school.
Hollywood High.
I loved every moment of it. Dictionary was my best friend because I needed, pretty much every other word translated.
At one time, I remember reading an article that they said, in Hollywood High, there are more languages spoken than at the UN. Because there's so many of the
probably
immigrants.
Probably so. Well, at that time, maybe not so many. And, you know, when I attended, I graduated in 83. I took there were ESL classes for kids like myself, with English being a second language. But, you know, I believe when your energy is on the positive direction, our minds are just capable of, you know, the limits the sky. Yeah. I really believe that.
So you're still fascinated by the American lifestyle?
From day one, I was.
She didn't give up faith. She didn't lose interest.
Right.
And it looks like she's adding to it and getting other people to
eyes. I sure hope so. My message is very clear. My book has become political. And when I started writing 10 years ago, I honestly did not could not imagine the state of our country would be at this level. I really believe we are going downhill, and that's great for my book, sad for the country.
Let me ask you a question. I have to ask you a question.
Sure.
First of all, when you're in a group or whatever, not that I do it, but you're not supposed to talk about religion or politics. I do it anyway because I like to stir things up, okay? So... let me ask you, with regard to politics, in which way are you leaning? This is so everyone out there can get an idea of what a poor, poverty-stricken immigrant feels. Well, you're not an immigrant anymore, but you were, and you remember it very well.
I believe I am an immigrant. I always will be an immigrant. I wasn't born in this country, but...
But your children are.
My children are absolutely first-generation Americans.
Now, do they feel the same way as you do?
I believe so. We're traditional folks, and this is what I will tell you about my political views. When I'm not happy with neither parties, neither Democratic or Republican. But
you know, you could run.
Probably so.
But not for president.
You know what? Probably so. I've made a conscious decision just when I was able to vote and register, I did register Republican. Because I believe, going back, Malcolm, to your comment about what as an immigrant do when you're helpless in that situation, yes, that help maybe was somewhat good, but for the most, it has become a lifestyle because the Democratic Party right now is just offering endless goods that this country cannot afford. We have completely shifted from our constitutional founding fathers' motto where small government, individual freedom has endless opportunities. And that is the ticket I run on and I advocate and I speak and hope to change many minds that hard work, good values, traditional home is the foundation of any solid beginnings for a young child, not social programs. Any topic we pick, the bottom line is mom and dad, good values, good discipline, that kid will be in the right track. We're not equal. One might end up being a scientist and another one might be a great electrician. But hard work is the core of both values, both outcomes. And that opportunity, I believe, is still very clearly available to anyone who seeks it. That's my message.
I agree with you to the extent, but how about if the child or that second generation, that the parents have not instilled this upon them, that they, for whatever reason, did not get the benefit of the intellectual education or the cultural education that you had? Let's say they either come from broken homes or homes that are dysfunctional. I mean, there are a lot of homes at the father, single parent homes, where the mom might be a junkie or a prostitute, or the same with the right. dad might be incarcerated. Now, there has to be social programs to help these people. Of course, there has to be a way. There has to be an end to it.
Right.
It's not a continuous type of thing, but there has to be some sort of program to help these people. We're not. That same, well, like when you came here.
You don't
here,
want to perpetuate it.
May I comment on that? That's a very good point. But
How are your kids in relation to you?
I believe that we need to restore the traditional values, that we don't have a mother who's a prostitute or incarcerated father. we need to do whatever we can to have that child understand that discipline and traditional values. In many cases with these types of children, there's grandparents who play the role of parents because schools
now
are
you sound like a Republican to me.
Well, she said she is registered Republican.
You know
Republican.
What schools are, and again, and so be it. You know what, I'm not happy with the Republican Party now. They need to get their act together. But we need discipline. I have very conservative children. They've told me fear is what kept them most of the time from doing the bad thing. Because I kind of either consciously or subconsciously did what my mother did. I was not very lovey-dovey. Maybe I should have been, but I was more disciplinarian and my kids did fear me and my husband, and they tell me today that that was a good thing.
Did they fear your husband? Because I know in the families that I know from back in the 50s and 60s,
yes.
whether Jewish or Italian,
yes.
the mother would always say she was home.
Yes,
and the mother would always say,
father,
if I tell your father.
Yes.
And when the father came home, he said, what are you telling me for? Take care of it. I'm working the whole day.
But, they didn't even know what that meant. But when I said, wait until I tell your father, they knew. And I'm going to take that one step further. My husband said, I will kill you if you do this.
And they're still alive.
And my children said, we took him literally. We thought he would really kill us. These are just statements, but, it kept them from doing the bad thing. So I want to restore the American family. A lot of the young children now are just mesmerized by the celebrities, and that's the wrong message.
Well,
Hollywood is partly responsible for the breakage of the American family.
It's a different world out there.
I don't think you could blame it on Hollywood. I think it starts with the parents.
It starts with the home.
But
the question is, now this entire world has changed with the internet and television and what the child is exposed to.
But Malcolm, I believe that some things are best the old-fashioned way. And yes, technology has its wonderful sides and then it has its, downsides. But I believe Hollywood partially promotes these, teenage young daughters, looking at Beyonce and thinking they can get half naked and do the same. So my foundation, my belief is that times are modern. Every generation in the 80s, I thought I was at the modern time. I didn't want to listen to my parents, but that foundation that was installed in me was a good thing. And I preach to anyone who listens that we need to restore American traditional families that effectively was, just well and alive in the 50s.
I mean, my favorite concept of the families, I think it was the Tahitian families, Tahiti, where they believed that the young ladies, they would have sex, and if they were pregnant, the brother would take care of the family.
I've never heard of that. This is news to me.
The pregnancy was a gift of God. It had nothing to do with sex. The sex was because it was fun.
Malcolm, that would never work in a city of 10 million.
I respectfully disagree with you. You remember in the 80s when Vice President Quayle criticized one of the TV shows with Murphy Brown.
Because she was a single mother.
Well, he always got into trouble.
And he was such a quiet man.
Single mother.
But he got such heat for saying it's not a great idea to promote single motherism, and I still to this day believe that it's tough enough with two parents.
Well, it's not that bad if you're a Murphy Brown and you're earning a few million dollars a year.
Go.
You could take it. If you're a struggling young lady in high school, I don't think it's a good idea.
Anybody who's earning a few million dollars a year, I don't care. They are not struggling.
But you know what? Again, that has nothing to do with raising a child. I know a lot of middle class or poor middle class folks who have done amazing disciplinary actions with their children. Look at the Hollywood children. There's a lot of drugs and they have nannies. So that's millions don't solve our problems.
Right. Definitely not.
I am going to continue promoting
as a whole is much more permissive than they were 100 years ago.
It's much more obvious now. Because in the old days with the, going to the wealthier people, a lot of wealthy men always had mistresses.
Right.
It wasn't, it was an accepted way of life. As long as he didn't insult the wife.
As long as everything else was in order.
In order, yes. So, of course, a lot of things have changed for the good. But when you look at today's world for the future of the young generation, that opportunity is basically shattered right now because the misconception of the way the media portrays things and the way kids have access to their cell phones. And I always
say
the
media is not really – the media today, I don't think they are really interested in – providing news or being the media. I think they're most interested in how much can we make.
Dollar
driven.
Yes.
And they will look for news that is what people want to see.
Yeah, there's no news anymore.
It's all opinions.
Well, I experienced that firsthand just a couple weeks ago when our jewelry store was hostilely taken over.
Was that the one that was on the internet?
Yes. And thankfully, very blessed that I'm actually physically sitting here. I have to say the Second Amendment in my husband's hand saved our lives. We were shot at first. It was a horrific situation.
We're going to get heat on that.
Okay.
But I agree with her.
But anyway, guys.
I have to say this, that media was just would not leave us alone, and they did offer us good amount of money to sell the video what took place inside store.
And you didn't accept.
And we absolutely
you could have sold it to the highest bidder. Let them bid.
Declined that.
We got to talk. Maybe we can have it on this show.
You know, why not?
Money. That's a good idea, Malcolm.
Anyway, we're running out of time.
We're running toward the end.
So, promote the book
again. This book is called The Price and Power of Freedom.
Show it to the...
And the picture of Lisa Vartanian is right on there. So there
Thank
you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Stan.
And where can they get it?
Thank you, Malcolm. It is available on Amazon. It was self-published. You can go to my webpage at lisavartanian.com. And from time to time, I blog and I put my 2 cents. What is taking place currently in our country.
I think you have more than 2 cents. I'm sorry.
Oh, one real quick question. What you know about your country and what you can find out about, how does that compare to what the media here in this country report about it, if anything?
There is, a lot of Armenians. You're referring to my old country, my adaptive country.
Your old country?
My old country.
What is really happening there, and what are they saying about it here, our news outlets?
There's a very little coverage about the Armenian issues that are taking place.
Excuse me, because we have to cut. I didn't even know that there's a war now in Armenia.
Right. There is a war in Armenia by the Azerbaijanis, and there's a full-blown war, you know, a loss of life.
30 and seconds.
Armenians are definitely have risen and trying to help financially and be supportive of the old country because it means a great deal to us. Okay. We were almost eliminated 100
years
ago.
We're almost eliminated now.
Well, we have to have you back talking about the history of Armenia.
Yeah,
we want to talk about with the Ottoman and the whole thing. Anyway, say goodbye.
Okay, say goodbye. Well, he's not there with the finger. Yeah, anyway,
he doesn't point the finger.
Okay, anyway, quick goodbye. Stan Weisleder, The View from Over
Thank
Here.
You.
We're on Malcolm's podcast, MalcolmDigitalRadio.com.
Thank you.
It's out. It's a cut. Aaron.